everyone. Welcome back to Holistic Health Masterclass Podcast with me, your host, Brett Hawes. I just wanted to open this episode up by saying a huge thank you to all of you out there listening. I just wanted to give you an update. I did actually announce this on my Facebook page and got a huge response. And we have to date over 30,000 downloads for the podcast and in about 42, 43 countries. And I'm honored and so blessed for all of your support. You know, I've done no advertising whatsoever with the podcast. I said that from the get-go. I haven't actually really promoted it at all because I've truly felt that, you know, if you don't have content to actually promote, you kind of just have to go for it and just do it. And eventually, as the content comes together and the episodes roll out, I will eventually have some more content to actually start running some ads to get more listeners on board. But yeah, just a huge thank you to, you know, all of you wherever you are. You know, we've got a lot of listeners tuning in from Hong Kong, from Australia, from South Africa, and of course, on this side of the pond as well, from the US and Canada. So yeah, huge thanks. So let's just hop right into today's show. And my good friend, who I've known for a couple of years now, Dr. Judith Boyce, joins me on the show. I'm not going to get into all of Judith's credentials because she's got quite a long and impressive list. But essentially, she's a naturopathic doctor, an author, a very, very skilled and gifted practitioner, trained in all sorts of things, you know, herbal medicine, homeopathy, Chinese medicine, acupuncture, and so on. And she's also a very accomplished author, having authored quite a few books. And today's focus is really on her latest book, which has actually gone to number one bestseller on Amazon. And that is called The Green Medicine Chest, Healthy Treasures for the Whole Family. The discussion that we have today is really, really interesting, I find, because we don't just talk about what herbs do and all that sort of stuff, you know, particular herbs for particular things. We really get into a lot of the concepts and the subtle differences between different types of medicine. And one thing we spend a good chunk of time on is something called herbal octaves, which I'd never really seen it being framed that way before. And not just herbal octaves, but actually octaves from a medicinal standpoint. And we talk about how we have these lower octaves, if you will, like heavier octaves, which would be drugs and pharmaceuticals. And then we work our way up into herbal octaves, which are a bit more neutral, and then into the flower essences, homeopathy, acupuncture, which are very high frequency, high octaves, right? And so I think that when you get into this kind of stuff, you probably, some bells will ring for sure. Because you might be finding that the approach that you're taking is not necessarily working for your health. So perhaps you've changed your diet and it's made no difference. Perhaps you've tried acupuncture and it didn't work. Perhaps you have tried massage therapy and that didn't work. And so I think, you know, tune into today's episode and really listen to what we talk about, because I actually had a couple of aha moments in this episode as well. So we spent a good chunk of time there. We also talk about vitalism and how to tap into the sort of innate vitality that we all have inside of us. But we wrap the show up with the Green Medicine Summit. And, you know, a lot of you listening to this might be a little summited out. You know, there seems to be a summit every week. But I encourage you to tune into this one, and there's a good reason why. Judith, you know, I was on a summit with her 2017, and when I looked at the roster of people that were speaking on the summit with me, there were a lot of people that I didn't really know. And most of the people were not people with giant email lists and on the cover of magazines and whatnot. And the reason why that's important is the people that Judith pulls together are people that have spent decades in their practice, perfecting their craft. And so what you're going to find with the Green Medicine Summit is you're going to get like really, really next level information from people that are actually working with the stuff in their practice every single day. This is very different from a lot of the sort of popular practitioners out there who many of them are not even practicing anymore. They're just very good business people. and they have that exposure and that reach. So definitely, you know, the Green Medicine Summit is a little bit more low key in terms of being publicized and advertised, but that's why I'm super psyched to actually be sharing it with you. It's totally free. Check out the dates in the show notes, check out the links in the show notes and everything. And yeah, definitely tune in, because there's some pretty cool stuff on homeopathy, flower essences, obviously botanical medicine as well, and so on and so on. So I'm going to leave it at that. Hopefully you enjoy today's episode, and as always, if you do, please consider sharing and sharing this with your friends, subscribing, and so on and so on. So thanks again for all the support, and hope you enjoy today's show. So welcome to the show, Judith. Great to reconnect with you again after some months. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and thank you so much for inviting me to join you, Brad.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, you just lightning fast background for those just tuning in here. Judith and I connected a couple of years ago. We were taking an online program together. And obviously, a lot of the practitioners in that group really connected and bonded. And I was on her summit last year, which would be 2017. And so we've had lots of good long conversations about all types of things. But today we are really choosing to focus on your book that you have recently published, which is actually an Amazon bestseller. So congrats for that. That's amazing.
Thank you.
And we're, of course, also going to talk a little bit about the Green Medicine Summit, which is coming up really shortly, like literally a few days from now. So Judith, perhaps just give us a little bit of a background on yourself. You know, you're a very seasoned practitioner, lots of different training, you've written a bunch of books. I'll just sort of hand it over to you and give us a bit of an overview of your career and how you came to be where you are today.
Thank you. Well, I am a naturopathic physician, which is one of the 4-year medically trained naturopathic doctors. I'm also a licensed acupuncturist, a fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Oncology, so I have a specialization in working with cancer patients. And I'm also a senior fellow of the Naturopathic Medicine Institute. I'm a senior vitalist. So vitalism is a really important part of my work and practice. As Brett mentioned, I'm passionate about writing and educating. The root of the Latin root of the word doctor is docere, which means to teach, and I take that very seriously. And I also needed a career to support my writing habit too. So the Green Medicine Chest, Healthy Treasures for the Whole Family, it's one of my books. I've also written books on menopause, and a recent one, Soul Medicine, is reflections on life, love, death, and healing, looking at many of the major, not only what happens with our physical health, but what happens with our whole being as we move through our life journey. So my aim is to work with people to discover what sustainable healthcare is, rather than just putting a Band-Aid on things. I'm interested in figuring out what sustainable healthcare is for people. That's my passion.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, carry on, please.
I was going to say, I've been in practice now for almost 24 years, so I'm a highly trained monkey, but my passion is really to serve people and creating what's most important for them and their life. Usually we want health to serve us and doing what's most important to us in their lives. So that's my passion, is supporting mm-hmm. people in that process.
And it definitely shines through. I mean, you know, we'll touch on this again in just a second, but you're having spoken with you enough now and really have gotten to know you over the last couple of years, I can honestly say that you are one of those people that is really dedicated their life to this work. And it's only really now, as you sort of get quite seasoned in your practice, that you're looking to really expand your wings in terms of publicity, notoriety, and stuff like that. And so I honor you for that as well, because I think that a lot of times from a practitioner, from a business standpoint, we really focus a lot on getting our business up and running and, you know, making ends meet and all that sort of stuff. And so it's refreshing to speak with someone who has done that, but has also really, really taken their craft to the level of mastery, which is simply amazing. So
Bless you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the book, because, you know, number one Amazon bestseller, obviously the name Green Medicine Chest is very open-ended. So perhaps, you know, what does the book entail, and why did you write the book? Who's it intended for? And what can readers expect to sort of see in the book or learn?
Right. Well, the book name came for me because I was really reflecting on what's the core of the medicine that I'm practicing. And for me, the word green implies that it's medicine that comes from the earth, and it embodies not just supplements, but also the way we go about living our lives. And excuse me. One of the understandings that I carry in how I work with our physical vehicles is that our bodies are microcosms of the Earth's body, the planet's body. We actually carry approximately 72% water in our whole body, and that's approximately the percentage of water on this planet. We carry the same salinity in our bloodstream as the salinity of the ocean. So we carry... we have the microcosm of the ocean also in our bloodstream. And we also then have our structure that we carry internally. We have our bones. Like, there's some critters that carry their structure externally, like insects that have exoskeletons. We carry our structure internally, and so does the earth. And we also carry our heat internally. We generate our heat from our core, just like the earth generates heat from its core. And we, and to a certain degree, also even generate our own light. And if you look, that's something I never thought about. I thought for a long time of only stars generating light, but actually our planet generates light to a certain degree as well. So we are microcosms of the Earth's body. And I wanted to be able to reflect that understanding then in the way that I practice medicine. So when I work with people, I realize that many people come to natural medicine initially with what I call a take this for that approach to the medicine. So, for example, oh, echinacea, you take echinacea for colds, you take this for that. Oh, Humphrey, you take it for wound healing, you take this for that. And I also found that there was... not necessarily a deep understanding, and this is understandable because most of us, all types of medicine, we begin in that take this for that mentality. That's how we approach pharmaceutical drugs. It's how we approach over-the-counter drugs. It's how we initially usually approach natural medicines. But I found that people were not necessarily getting the benefit out of the medicines that they were using, because they just stayed at that take this for that level and didn't understand the plants are really quite amazing and multifaceted in their effects on people. So I was trying to figure out how to convey that information to people. Like, for example, I've had a lot of patients who will come and they'll say, you know that vitamin C you gave me, you know that homeopathic remedy? Not understanding necessarily that vitamin C is a nutrient and not a homeopathic remedy. and that's very true for many people. And it's not that that's bad or wrong, but I realized, oh, no wonder people say things like, oh, yeah, I tried such and such, but it didn't really help me very much, because they may not have understood deeply enough about a particular medicine to really get the full benefit.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just want to sort of touch on a few things that you've laid out. You know, I think that there's still this misperception out there that, as my good friend Dr. Ginger Nash says, that natural medicine is the sort of evil, you know, bastard stepchild of allopathic medicine, in a way. And what I mean by that, and what I take from it anyway, is that it comes back to what you're talking about, this sort of treating disease, if you will, with remedies, with supplements, with whatever the case may be. But what we've really lost sight of is the fact that it's on a fundamental level, natural medicine is completely different than allopathic medicine, in the sense that, you know, the basic tenets of natural medicine or holistic health is we do look at the whole person. you have to look at what are the emotional, psychological factors that are driving a physical condition. Are there spiritual factors that are involved? Is the, you know, the condition primarily emotional, or is it primarily physical, and so on and so on and so on? And then actually working on the holistic side of things to restore balance, not simply to get rid of the symptoms. And I find that, and I deal with this all the time, just, you know, I mean, preaching to the choir here, but we get those questions all the time. What should I take for X condition? What should I do for this? And it's sort of like, well, I get it. I get that you have to start there, but we should really be asking why the person has what they have versus what to, how to treat what they have, if that makes any sense.
Yes. Yes. And one of the analogies I give to people, like when I work with people, I'll give them multiple recommendations that include far more than just the supplements. And in fact, I think of the supplements, the natural medicines, as the icing on the cake. And so when we sit down and say, okay, what are the things that you need to do to address this particular condition? Like yesterday, someone came who had some pretty severe digestive issues that have been going on for quite a while. So we were looking at how she eats. Like, does she actually stop and chew? And does she actually have a quiet meal with her husband at the end of the day? Or is she eating on the way home, driving 50, 60 miles an hour? You know, what's her relationship with food? But also, is she sleeping? Is she getting enough sleep? It turned out she was only getting 7 hours of sleep consistently, and she couldn't understand why she was tired. So we started with these very, I think of them as cornerstone, basic, but basic doesn't mean simple and unimportant. Basic, like foundation stones under a home. Those foundations have to be there. Doesn't matter how perfect the construction is if the foundations are not in place.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, again, preaching to the choir. But for those of you listening out there, you know, perhaps it hasn't been framed in a certain way, or perhaps it hasn't been framed like this before. And so understanding that the very elements that make up the universe make up us, our environment, which is really what you're talking about right now, our environment has a profound impact on our physiology and our well-being, and has physical implications. And so oftentimes, you know, I had a client yesterday too, where we were talking about these things, and I said, you know, I really think that your situation has to change. Like, you know, the environment and the situation that you're putting yourself in is just causing a lot of internal stress and causing all the problems that you're dealing with. But it's interesting, and it's great to hear you say that as well, especially someone with almost 25 years of clinical experience, because sometimes these changes, that's where the real magic lies, right?
Yes.
The simple changes, the shifts in the environment, the changing of, you know, sleeping habits and so on, can really make a huge difference for people.
Exactly. And I'm thinking also about, I think we may have talked about this in the past, that one of the ways that we actually arrive in our physical bodies and in the place that where we live is to begin to work with the elements around us, with the plants around us. So for example, many medicine people, when they go to work in a particular area, before they do any work with someone, with the earth or with a human being, they stop and they eat some of the plants in that local area, because they understand, they take in into their physical vehicle. They begin to ingest the medicine, the plants, the beings around them, so that they begin to recalibrate and actually become, they are then in harmony with the area that they live in. So when we drink the water where we live, over time, we become calibrated with the same mineral content as the water. If we eat food that is grown in our local area, we begin to be calibrated with the soil in that area. Mm. And there's an incredible power, an incredible support, and being in a harmonious relationship with the area where you live. So another layer of what we're talking about is, and in working with green medicine, I encourage people to work with the local plants as much as they can. I'm trained also in Chinese medicine and other systems of herbal medicine. But I like to take the principles of those medicines and as much as I can apply them to local plants. And sometimes part of the healing is for people to learn how to grow that own that plant in their own backyard. That's part of the healing.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Dr. Bernard Jensen, who I've studied extensively and was mentored by one of his students, that's what he would actually do with his patients. He had a ranch out in Colorado, and they would come out and they would have to go and pick the food from there. You know, they'd sometimes stay for 3 months. And they would go and pick their beets. They would juice their beets. They would do whatever. So I totally hear what you're saying with that. And I think it's, you know, which sort of brings up a couple of things, not to sort of steer us too far off track today. But the question then begs as well, you know, when you think about eating local foods and how much of our food these days is actually imported. Now, maybe not so much for you guys in the US, but for here in Canada, 90% of our food is actually imported. Which means that we have 10% food sovereignty, which is kind of crazy on multiple levels. But just from a food energetic perspective, you know, and you've got people now that are doing raw vegan diets, that are eating lots of fruits and stuff like that, and you know, through the winter, for example. And so, you know, hearing you say that, I do wonder to myself, you know, what are the physical and energetic implications of eating a tropical fruit grown in Florida, and I'm sitting in Canada in the middle of winter.
Right. Well, actually, one of the theories about why people develop food allergies and food intolerances, one possible explanation of many, is that we may be eating foods that we're not really genetically designed for. Mm-hmm. We're now able to move around the planet much more quickly than our bodies may adjust to that region. So for example, one of my food allergies is orange. I'm a Northern European mongrel. I've been in North America for some of my family lineage goes back at least 500 years. And so it's like, well, who am I? what's local for me? But no wonder that I might be reacting to citrus, because that's not something that, in terms of my genetic lineage, that's not something they would necessarily have been exposed to. To me, it's an extraordinary, I'm a passionate seed saver and heirloom plant grower. And part of my passion is that gives us that control to be able to grow our own food, to grow our own herbs, to be able to have a relationship with the land where we live. And the plants that grow and want to grow and thrive in the area where you live are probably going to be some of the best plants to support you. Some examples of that, and it also extends to other forms of food. Like, for example, in the Pacific Northwest, where I'm living now, there traditionally was a lot of salmon fishing. They're not very healthy now because of the changes in the, the rivers. But there's a lot of the essential fatty acids that are in those fish, and those essential fatty acids are fabulous for seasonal affective disorder, which is very common here because of the gloomy winters in the Pacific Northwest. So here we have this local food, salmon, that's really appropriate for the conditions that tend to show up in this area. There's also in the Pacific Northwest, in the rain shadow part of the Pacific Northwest, a lot of usnea. It's a plant, old man's beard, that grows. It looks like sort of like tinsel, but it's not shiny, but it's like tinsel that's draped on the trees. And it's an amazing antifungal herb, perfect in this climate that is so damp, damp.
Yeah, cold, damp, but mild, you know, it's not freezing cold. Ideal for fungal growth.
Yeah. Exactly. And so it's a perfect herb to be indigenous and plentiful in that particular area. So often we have medicines and foods that grow well in the area where we live that are in turn supportive for our bodies. So Canada, great place to grow grains, a lot of the root vegetables. And from Chinese understanding, those are really helpful to be able to survive in a colder climate.
Because they keep well, right? You know, things that can be stored. Sorry to interject for a second, but what would you consider meats then under that as well?
Well, this is my own particular bias with the whole kind of raw vegan thing, is that that in general, a lot of raw foods work really well if you live in a hot climate.
Right.
From right. Chinese understanding, a lot of raw is cooling.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody lived in India, like I lived for about 4 months in Tamil Nadu in the south of India, oh, it's hot, really
yeah.
hot.
Yeah.
And so eating cooling foods can be helpful to survive in that climate. If you live in a climate in the farther north where it's cold and damp and dark for a lot of the year, many people are not going to do well with a vegan or a lot of raw food. They just their digestive system won't function well. I don't know if someone was vegan, they would probably need a lot more of the beans and the complex carbohydrates, the whole grains. Like I lived in Alaska, in the interior of Alaska, and I think people can be vegan there, but you've got to work at it and choose the denser complex carbohydrates.
Like heavier foods to kind of keep you a bit more grounded in the cold, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So fascinating stuff. And, you know, it's a good quote unquote departure that we've taken because I could talk about that stuff all day long, right? I think we both could. Yeah. Bringing it back on point, you said something a little bit earlier that kind of, and we've been sort of dancing around it for a little while. This whole idea of frequency, you know, the frequency or calibration, I think is what you called it. But something that we've been talking about that I've never actually heard of is something you refer to as herbal octaves. Like perhaps, you know, octaves, obviously sound, frequency, vibration, but perhaps elaborate that on that a little bit more if you can.
Yes, I was realizing I have a background in music, just so you know, that I often think
Ditto.
In terms of, great. So you'll understand this and hopefully listeners too. Think about a piano keyboard. And I think about medicine as a whole spectrum being like that piano keyboard. I think of drugs and surgery being like bass notes. They're deep, heavy, and there are times when we really need those bass notes. And I think of food and herbs being middle C, and then more subtle preparations of especially plant medicines, although not just plant medicines, being like the upper octaves of the keyboard. So the upper octaves are things like homeopathy, acupuncture, flower essences.
And would you consider those to be more subtle then or just different?
More different. It's more that it's different. So for example, I don't know if you or anyone has had this experience of going into a room and someone hits a note, for example, on the piano keyboard, and certain things in the room start to vibrate, or a tuba hits a certain note and certain things in the room start to vibrate. And that's an example of resonance, that particular object has the same resonance, the same frequency as that note.
Right.
And so each of us have a home base on that keyboard. And so there's certain people who will have acupuncture as their home base. That's what they really respond to. And there are other people, they really need drugs and surgery. That's what they're attuned to. That's what they respond best to. And my bias, even though my training is actually to address that whole keyboard, I can prescribe pharmaceutical drugs, but my preference personally and with patients is to work with middle C up. That's my own kind of resonance area.
So in other words, you're talking more plant medicines up into homeopathy and acupuncture and stuff like that, right?
Right. And that very upper end of the keyboard is also things like meditation and prayer and also the inner work that people do.
Yeah.
So that's more my home base, that upper end of the keyboard. But sometimes people come certain that their home base is the upper end of the keyboard, and it's not. They make all the changes and they work with the medicines and they're just not responding.
You know, I think that this is fascinating / you kind of blew my mind because I understand these things, but the way that you've explained it really makes a lot of sense. And I think that for those of you listening out there as well, you know, you've probably experienced this perhaps. I've certainly experienced this. So I'll just share my own personal experience. You know, I always say to my students, to not usually to my clients, but I've said publicly so many times that I'm my own worst case study in that all of the medicines and the things that I do with my clients that get them well, usually don't do anything for me in that I don't feel anything. You know, I take all the supplements and, you know, don't get me wrong, I do superfoods, concentrated foods, you know, whole food supplements and stuff, which are really more broad spectrum than laser focused. But I find that all of the other things that I've tried just don't work. But I respond very well to things like craniosacral therapy, to acupuncture, to more subtle spiritual sides of things as well. Like, I find that that has the biggest influence on me. But it's like watching paint dry, right? It's just, you can't see anything, and it's not this lightning bolt, you know, crazy experience that everyone wants to have. And I think that you just have to be a little bit quiet to really dial into the subtle energies, right? So thank you for putting it into that context, because I think that's a really great visual, but also perhaps highlights, again, for those of you listening out there, why some things might not work for you. And it doesn't mean that they don't work, period. It just means that perhaps it's not right for you as an individual. Yeah.
That's an excellent point. And so part of it can be that it's you're in the wrong octave, or something like, from my own experience as an example in homeopathy, I was introduced to homeopathy in Britain, but in Britain, the only potencies, the only strength of homeopathic remedies you can get are very, very low potency. So I would try things that in retrospect, I think were actually well chosen remedies, but they were such a low potency, they didn't really have any effect on me.
Right.
So part of it is getting the right place on the keyboard, but then part of it is also having enough skill with that particular remedy to really use it well and to be able to get the benefit from it.
And so if I can ask you a question, do you find, you know, when we were talking about octaves and the place on the keyboard and that, when people come to you and they're out of balance, do you find that are they have their home base in terms of their octave? Have they sort of shifted along the keyboard and they're in the wrong place and you're using remedies to bring them into the right place? Or, you know, or how does that work?
That's a good question.
It makes sense. I'm not sure if I'm asking it the right way.
Right. Well, part of it, it's detective work. Like I will begin working in an area. So for example, I'll give an example for myself. Years ago, I was working with bladder spasms. I'd had a bladder infection and I had these spasms afterwards, and it was perfect for the homeopathic remedy Sarsaparilla. All of the symptoms fit. And I took the remedy and nothing happened. And so I decided, you know what? I'm going to try the herb, which I think of as being a lower octave, because this was a very physical problem. And that my body responded beautifully to the herb. So part of it is figuring out the remedy the person needs at that time. And this is the way I've over time come to think about choosing for a particular patient. First, it's tuning into what's the plant? What's the plant that this person would most benefit from? And that requires deep listening, which I'll come back to in just a moment. So once I've figured out the plant, then I need to figure out what octave of the plant. So I generally, with plant medicine, think of herbs being that middle C. Another octave up is what are called gemotherapies, which are the herbs made from the very buds, the very tips, the beginning, which are just like the spring first growth, which are so full of nutrients and enzymes and different things. So that's another octave up. And then another octave beyond that, we're starting to look at essential oils. And another octave beyond that, we're looking at homeopathy. And another octave up, we're looking at flower essences. Although homeopathy and flower essences, depending on the potency of the homeopathic remedy, could be higher or lower than each other, but they're kind of in similar range.
Right.
So that's the next piece. And if someone doesn't respond initially, like if I guess, oh, this is someone who's more in the herbal octave, and they react really strongly to the herb and have kind of a negative reaction, then I might think about creating that, working with that same plant, but using it as a flower essence or using it as a homeopathic remedy.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's, again, very, very interesting and fascinating. And especially, you know, we have our listeners, there's a huge amount of them are practitioners. So I'm sure that some bells are ringing right now for you guys listening out there, because it sure is ringing for me. And we've had those types of clients and patients in our practice who have fairly violent reactions to certain things. And so I love the fact that, you know, taking it up into the higher octaves is perhaps a good way to go, because perhaps those reactions that they're having are not necessarily negative reactions. They're just too intense, right?
Exactly. And it's always, this is part of the sorting process as well, is that I always have to look at when someone has a quote unquote negative reaction, it may actually be part of an aggravation or healing crisis, which in the long run is a good thing. And that takes a lot of education. So for example, another patient who was in the office yesterday, I'd given him the homeopathic remedy Metarhinum, which is an extremely deep acting remedy that has a, can have a profound effect, even an ancestral effect, you know, just an amazingly deep acting remedy. And he took the remedy, and I guess very carefully instructed to him, just take up to three doses, one a day for up to 3 days. But if you have a response before 3 days are up, stop. And that response could be an aggravation or an improvement. You need to stop if you have any kind of a response. So he took one dose, and he said for 2 hours, he had chills and he felt like he had the flu. He didn't feel good at all. Wow. And he came back 2 weeks later for his visit. And we had a discussion, and I said, oh, you know, tell me more about those symptoms. Did they continue for a period of time? And he said, no, after 2 hours, they went away. And I reminded him about the whole understanding of an aggravation, that the homeopathic remedy can do a deep, I think about it like stirring up the pond so that some of the mud rises up into the water again, which in the long run is not a bad thing at all. It's the body gearing up to throw off the effect of whatever the condition was. So he kind of had this funny look, and then he said, oh yeah, you told me about that. You warned me that that could happen. I'd forgotten about that. And then I said, now tell me how you've been since then. If he told me then, oh, that flu continued and I felt awful for a week or two, I would think, either that wasn't the right remedy, or he may have had the flu coming on and it just happened to be that he took the remedy at the same time as the flu.
Right.
He said, oh, you know what? I haven't had the constipation since I took that remedy, and my urinary frequency is better. I don't have to pee as often. And yeah, my energy has come up. Then I know that that was an aggravation. It was a short-term stirring up of the sediment at the bottom of the pond, followed by an improvement. That's a classic example of an aggravation followed by an improvement.
Wow. And just, I mean, you know, I've experienced similar things in practice, but not so much with homeopathy. And I know, you know, classical homeopathy is a real art. And when you get it right, it can just have dramatic impacts on all facets of one's being, really.
Yes.
From the spiritual right the way down to the physical, right? So something that you mentioned earlier, because I do want to move our conversation on today, you mentioned something about vitalism. And I know you've given a few examples here of some of your patients that you've been working with, but perhaps you can dive into the concept of what vitalism is and give us a couple of examples.
Yes. Well, vitalism is working with the body's innate core energy. Our vitality, our vitalism is what separates us from a corpse. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. That living, vital presence is what defines us as alive human beings. And the purpose of vitalism is to engage our body's own vital force, our own energetic core, to be able to do restoration and rebalancing work. And I contrast this with, like, right now, the world of functional medicine, as an example. The aim there is to look at all of our biochemical pathways and then go in and tinker and try to rebalance and readjust and make this one go that way and compensate for this break over here. But what's amazing is that, with some exceptions, if you engage the body's innate vital force, often the body will figure out those workarounds on its own. We don't have to go in and tinker. There's an innate wisdom. There's an innate intelligence that's right down to our cellular level. It's right down to our mitochondria. There's an intelligence shot through our entire being from the tiniest component of ourselves to our soul, there's an intelligence that's innate there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the aim of vitalism is to engage and augment that innate intelligence.
And so what, I mean, this I know is like one of the sort of cornerstones of chiropractic medicine, right? Is to sort mm-hmm. of tap into that. But what in your mind then, now that we understand that concept, what is the one way you think that is either the easiest or has the most profound impact, or one can tap into this vitalism that you're talking about?
Oh, again, it depends on what octave they're on the keyboard.
Right. So we come back to that.
Right. So for some people, that's changing their diet, and they have a profound response to changing their diet. For someone else, it's practicing Qigong, which is more way upper end of the octave. There are also certain flower essences when we're talking about those octaves. John Dennis talks about the orchid flower essences not only being remedies, they're not only rebalancing or remedying imbalances in the mental emotional realm, they can also serve as enhancers to enhance not only our mental emotional realm, but our spiritual realm as well. So mm-hmm. for some people, what's going to really catapult them and move them to another level is working with enhancing, like going beyond the nuts and bolts of restoring or changing biochemical pathways. For them, their home base is doing a complete recalibration on a energetic or spiritual level. So there is no one size fits all. And that's part of the journey, is working with a practitioner who can help guide you. And sometimes mm-hmm. it takes some detective work, but usually I've got an idea of the ballpark that someone's going to respond to when I start working with them.
Mm-hmm. And I find it fascinating because, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head with the whole functional medicine piece. And I kind of feel like a lot of holistic nutrition nowadays has also just become nutrition, where if you eat XYZ kind of diet and just make sure you eat low carb and make sure that you avoid, then everything's just going to be fine, right? And I can share some rough statistics from my own practice where, and I'm sure you have the same, I get a huge amount. I would say half, if not even more than half of my clients coming to see me, they already have their diet figured out to the point where I look at the diet and I'm like, wow, this looks amazing. You should come around to my house and cook sometime because this is awesome. Right. And then, you know, I sort of took a step back and then I'm like, well, why, how come you're still here? Like, why are you here to see me in practice? Like, surely. And so I started cluing into this a few years ago now, where I was like, man, there's a lot of people that are eating well, but that's not their medicine. Their medicine, and, you know, myself having a very varied background in the spiritual realms, you know, energy psychology, blah, 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 I find that sometimes it's actually the medicine that people need is completely different in terms of what they came in to see me for.
Yes.
And sometimes I'll start talking about animal totems and power animals and, you know, all sorts of other crazy stuff. And people look at me like I'm a little weird, but they walk away and they go, I really needed to hear that. And mm-hmm. that was it. And that's the simple exchange of ideas, of teachings, of wisdom is enough to set them on a different path and to change the way that they perceive themselves, their health conditions, and all that. You know, I found it quite profound, actually.
Right. And actually, that I also see the flip too, that sometimes people come in looking for, they want very subtle, a spiritual response to things. And what really needs to happen is there needs to be some physical consolidation. Mm. One of the presenters in the summit, Judith Polarenz, talked about how in the Alaska flower essences, they have gem essences that they've made. And she talks about how often the role of the gem elixirs is to help people who've had this major spiritual breakthrough put themselves back together, like build a new foundation.
Yeah.
So that then they're standing on a new platform and then they can make another leap. But if you just leap, and you don't do some consolidation and some physical grounding, you're not going to get very far. It's going to float off into space. Yeah. And so it's actually, again, to me, it goes back to multifaceted. It's the understanding of holism. Like, I'll say to patients, they'll sometimes say to me, shouldn't we just start with one thing and do one thing? And I'll say, well, tell me, when you make a cake, do you put an egg in the oven and then take it out? And then do you put a cup of flour in and then take it out? and then put the cup of milk in and then take it out? Or do you put them together and then put them in the oven?
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. The baking a cake analogy. I've used that for a while and it's so spot on, right? It's that, but this again is holistic health, right? You have to shift the mind, the body and the soul in order to really move your whole being forward into a different state of health, and not just a different state of health, but a state of health that can be maintained.
Yes.
That moving it's forward, you know? Yeah. Yes. You're not just shifting pieces around and never really going anywhere. Right. So let's talk about the summits, because, and I'm just going to preface the summit here before you get into it. One thing I want to say to you guys listening to this out there, you know, there's a lot of summits that are going on. I am promoting a couple of summits right now, this Green Medicine Summit being one of them, and I'm actually really excited to be promoting this one. But here's what I want to preface this by saying. What I've started to notice on a lot of summits, and I'm not bashing anyone here, is simply that we start to see the same people on all these different summits, right? And one week, someone is a mental health expert, and the next week, they're a genetic expert, and the next week, they are a digestion expert, and so on and so on. And one of the things that I'm excited about for the Green Medicine Summit is that, Judith, you have compiled a roster of speakers and teachers, visionaries, healers, that have really been doing the work, in many cases decades, doing the work and actually this boots on the ground kind of approach, right? Where they're actually in clinics, they are actually doing this work, they are helping people, and we're now sharing these experiences versus simply looking at it from a, you know, I'm going to do an affiliate, you know, summit partnership and blah, 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 blah. You know, so that's one thing that really excites me. And I think that it shows, because you, as someone with almost 25 years of experience, you've actually attracted the same kind of people. And I noticed that when I did the last summit with you last year, you know, the company that I was in was very esteemed company. People that had really dedicated a large portion of their lives to helping others and helping the planet. So thank you for putting the summit on, and I'll hand it over to you to just sort of give us the lay of the land and what people can expect and when it's happening.
Wonderful. And Brett, I wanted to say too, I was so honored to have you as part of the summit last autumn. I really appreciated your presence there.
Thank you.
This summit was an inspiration for me because I wanted to bring together practitioners from those four octaves together in one summit. So homeopathy, essential oils, flower essences, herbs, so that people could begin to get a flavor and understanding of the profound gifts that the plants give us. And again, if we utilize them skillfully, what amazing transformations we can experience in our health and in our life. So I contacted some of the people who've been my mentors and my inspirations over the years. Matthew Wood is one of the presenters. He is the author of the Earthwise Herbal, and he has a passion for the plants. I won't go into his whole long story, but he had such a profound connection with plants as a young man, like a 12, 13-year-old, that he decided to dedicate his life to working with the plants. He understood that the plants, the earth, everything around him was alive. He was alive. And then that began to inspire him to learn about the plants. So he says, you know, if people come and they can't pay me, I don't care, but they got to pay for the plants, because that's respect for the plants.
Yeah, yeah.
So Matthew is an example of someone who's sharing from that herbal octave. Dr. Jillian Stansbury, who is one of my mentors in school, she has for the last 15 years been working as an ethnobotanist in South America and the Andes and the Amazon. And she brings her understanding of how plants interact with us on physical levels, but also on spiritual levels. And she has an extraordinary sharing. There are two different flower essence practitioners. And I feel like that's one of the least well understood areas of plant medicine, flower essence.
Getting into teachings of Dr. Bach, like Edward Bach in that?
Yes. Yeah. And Bach was actually, Dr. Edward Bach was actually bringing about a renaissance of a method of working with plants that's been used for millennia all around the planet.
Interesting.
People often credit him as being the founder of working with flower essences, but he was actually rediscovering excuse me, a very ancient method. So there are two different practitioners, Don Dennis from Scotland, who works with living tree orchid essences, and then Judith Polarans, who works with the Alaska flower essences. Excuse me. And then homeopathy. Dr. Gregory Pace is someone who has worked with plant medicines his whole life, but his passion for the last 25 years has been homeopathy. And he is one of the people who really carries that spirit of vitalism and homeopathy. He so profoundly understands it, and he's so wonderful at transmitting that understanding. And the other is Kathy Keevil. She has been working as an herbalist and aromatherapist both for over 40 years and founded a school. She works with Plant Savers Exchange as well, which is dedicated to being able to sustain these incredible plant species that we are coming to rely on for medicine. That's a whole nother piece we didn't get to go into. And part of why I'm really interested in people learning more and more to grow their own medicines and to very carefully, sustainably harvest them and to continue to nurture the wild environments where these herbs grow so that we can continue to have these medicines.
And I know that we've spoken about that before outside of today, where, you know, wildcrafting is something, I'll just interject for one lightning fast second here, that wildcrafting has become a bit of, is becoming a bit of an issue, right? Where we're not sustainably harvesting, but also we're not quite sure what, you know, like in the case of medicinal mushrooms, they pull up a lot of toxins from the ground. And so if they're grown in an area that, you know, perhaps does have toxins, or, you know, there's perhaps a landfill, or, you know what I mean? Like there's something else going on outside of that. So the whole idea of wildcrafting is a little bit hit and miss in a sense. And it's not all that it's cut out to be all the time, at least.
That's right. You can wildcraft right next to a superhighway
and exactly.
call it wildcrafting. So, and finally, I'll be sharing also more about deep listening in the plant realm and herbal octaves. So it's a it's an opportunity to really dive deeply into understanding plant medicine and recognizing what profound gifts the plant world offers us and how we can begin to interact respectfully and utilize to really be able to accept and celebrate the gifts of these plant medicines.
Amazing. And I think that, you know, just hearing you speak about it, and hopefully for those of you listening, you know, getting a bit of an intro here to Dr. Boyce, where, you know, just listening to you speak, I get a strong sense of your passion, but not just that, you know, the people that you're bringing together are not people that just have a passion. They have a much deeper understanding. And I truly feel that they have a lot of wisdom in their teachings that they bring to the summit. So I'm really excited for the summit coming up. And those of you listening, definitely check out the show notes below. If you're on my mailing list, you will be getting some emails about this as well. And it's totally free. What are the dates again, Judith? If you can just...
That's May 4th through 6th. You'll have free access to all of the presenters, and there'll be some other events coming after. So stay tuned as well.
But okay, So check out the links in the show notes for sure. Judith, thank you so much for being here today. Really, really awesome to sit down with you. And I feel like we could keep chatting for hours and hours and hours about all kinds of stuff. Truly, we've had those long conversations before. But I don't want to say bore our listeners, but we don't want to take them on too far of a journey. We'll save that for the summit.
Wonderful. So, thank you.
Yes.
It's just such a delight always to be able to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, totally. And again, thanks for coming on. So those of you listening out there, if you want to check out the summit, show notes below. You can also go straight onto the website, holistichealthmasterclass.com. And if you check under podcast, you will see this episode there and all information, links, et cetera, for you to get yourself signed up and registered. I will also be posting a link to Judith's book, the best-selling book, and also to her website and a bunch of other stuff. So we'll sort of see what we decide to publish after the fact. Right, so we'll leave it at that. As always, if you do like the show, consider sharing, subscribing, yelping, tweeting, doing whatever you can do to really help get Holistic Health Masterclass podcast out there and help me to continue to bring you more awesome information and awesome guests like Dr. Judith Boyce. So thanks, Judith, for being here, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, Jen. This has been such a delight.
Okay, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.